Welcome to yet another episode of Magic the Amateuring.
Yes, but this is a special episode, so it's really kind of like not just another episode.
That's right. I didn't say just another episode.
What did you say?
I said another episode.
True enough.
Because just sounds like I'm putting a judgment on us, like, oh, them again. Just them. Oh, gosh.
No, this is a special episode because this is Judge Fest 2016.
It certainly is. If you're watching the video of this, you've already been clued into that because we are surrounded by people so much more knowledgeable than we are.
We're surrounded on all sides by judges.
We are.
Is this what Britain feels like except with water?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, sweet.
We have to elect one of the three of them to be the English channel.
Are they called judges in Britain? Are they like barristers or anything like that? I mean, they could be.
That would be awesome.
Magistrates.
So you've heard these voices coming from the ether, and it's true. It's not just Megan and I on this episode.
We have a couple of judges, so we'll go down the line, and if you all could just give a quick hello to everybody with your name.
All right, starting at the right end.
Yeah.
Hey guys, this is Patrick Cool, local here to Minneapolis. I'm here to have some fun. It's gonna be great.
What level judge are you?
I'm a level 2 judge.
Level 2, nice.
You certified for L2 twice as many times as anybody else in the room.
Yes, that is in fact correct. I liked it so much the first time, I did it again.
That might be me in a few years.
Hey.
All right.
I'm Rob McKenzie. I'm level 3 judge. This is my house. I sleep in the next room over.
Weird.
Everybody knows.
Wow. Yeah.
Yep.
Where you
and
can find
the regional coordinator of the North region.
Yes.
I'm April King. I am a level 10 judge here in Minneapolis. That's not actually true. I'm level 2, but I wish I was level 10. And I'm going to be hosting the Jeopardy episode today.
Awesome. So what we're going to do for Judge Fest 2016 is, this is an idea that I got when we were doing the judge conference for the North Region judges, and so many people had questions for judges. I thought, wouldn't it be great just get a bunch of judges in a room and have people just throw their questions at them, literally and figuratively.
Like feces?
Like a monkey with
please.
Poop.
Maria
please
and I
do not throw things
later,
at us.
Later at the, during the question, during the question asking portion, Maria and I are going to write people's questions on paper and then throw them at you.
Yes. And then whoever is the quickest reflexes may answer.
Do you have like a baseball glove or something so I can catch them?
No, that's cheating.
If it hits you, it's your question to answer.
So yeah, we'll be doing a question round.
That's fair.
With our judges. But first, we're going to play Jeopardy, Magic the Jeopardying, hosted by April. She wrote all these wonderful questions. So we're going to compete against Patrick and Rob, and then we will switch things around, and we'll do a judge questions round with questions submitted through Twitter and on Twitch, because this show is live, everybody.
It sure is, in case you couldn't tell.
Yep.
It's extremely live.
It's not even kind of live.
It's very
it's
alive.
It's super live.
Get it out of this hospital. It doesn't need to be here.
That's right, because hospitals are for dead people.
What?
Oh, God.
No.
Believe me.
No. I think you mean the term you're looking for is morgue.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's get this Jeopardy started.
All right, well, let's do this. But before I get started, I want to make a quick shout out to my friend Chuck, who actually helped me with some of the questions.
Ooh, awesome.
Chuck is awesome. Mm-hmm.
Chuck's a great guy.
Thank you very much,
yeah,
Chuck.
He also helped with the Eldrazi deck, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Many thanks
super
to Chuck.
Super sweet Eldrazi deck.
We had an Eldrazi deck for the Community Super League in Novanless Modern, and it was awesome. Eldrazi Clog Post. Super sweet. Okay.
All right, so welcome to Jeopardy. Here are your categories for today. So there is no double Jeopardy. There is no final Jeopardy or anything. It's just 30 amazing Jeopardy questions. Remember, or Jeopardy clues, remember, your answer has to come in the form of a question or you will not get any points. I'm very strict about this.
Okay.
All right. So your categories for today are keyword madness, where you will get a description of something and you need to name the keyword. We have before and after. We have strictly better. You will be given a card and then asked to name its strictly better counterpart that most people would say. We have manaless lands. These are lands that do not produce any mana at all. Furnace of Wraths, a walk through the Wraths in Magic's history. And finally, we have quotable quotes, where you will be given a piece of flavor text and asked to name who came up with that flavor text or who it belongs to.
Maria and I
name the card, we name the character.
You name the character.
What?
Oh, Maria and I are going to
name the character behind the flavor text.
I'm just going to tap out on that one
and
right
now. I'm hoping
now,
I can remember.
I'm not going to get anywhere with that.
Oh, boy.
All right. Yeah. So I have chosen it. Completely at random, who gets to go first, and I've decided it is Megan and Maria.
Yes.
So Megan and Maria, completely at random,
we need
one category.
Any edge.
We do.
Edge we can get. Let's go with, you want to go with Furnace of Wraths?
Do you know a lot about Wraths?
I mean, it's one of my favorite types of cards.
Okay, hit it. We'll take Furnace of Wraths for 100, please, Alex.
2WW, destroy all creatures that cannot be regenerated. Megan and Maria.
What is Wrath of God?
That is correct.
Yes!
Woo!
We did it.
All
we
right.
Got one right. All right.
The only one we'll get right. You pick the next one. I picked
okay.
the first one.
We could keep going, but I want to try quotable quotes just because I'm a... what's the word?
Terrified?
Glutton for punishment, that's it.
Okay. I believe you meant Vorthos.
So I may have been a little drunk when I wrote these clues, so
okay.
I might not remember the answers for it.
All right.
Great.
Yeah.
For 100, please, Alex.
All right. Innistrad's ghoul callers are talented enough, but let me show you what someone with real power can create.
I don't know for sure.
It's Alex's choice.
I can't tell. I thought your buzzers were like... Let's say Megan and Maria.
They're oh, no.
Okay.
Who is Gisa?
That is incorrect.
Oh, no.
Are we stealing? Is that how
yeah,
this
you
works?
You can steal it, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Patrick.
Who is Liliana?
That is correct.
Ooh,
Liliana Vess.
Sorry. Yep. Sorry. Sorry.
Patrick, you have control of the board.
I'll take Furnace of Wraths for 200.
Furnace of Wraths.
For
200. Two black. So we have to wait until the question has been read. That's how Jeopardy works.
Oh, sorry.
You can't just buzz in right away.
Sorry.
Really? Do you have to wait?
Yeah, in actual Jeopardy, you get penalized if you buzz in.
Oh,
too
okay.
Soon.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay.
All right.
Two black, destroy all creatures. They can't be regenerated. Megan and Maria.
What is damnation?
That's correct.
These we need to make these buzzers sound more different.
Yeah, they're yeah. super. Maybe you could put your names in them. That would make it easier.
Oh. Or ours could be like a siren yeah. sound. Okay, you re-record first, and then we'll re-record.
Yeah. I'm a teapot.
Yep, that's
right,
mine.
That's good.
All right, this is.
Okay.
Yeah. See.
What are we doing?
We're gonna do like a really high pitch. Wee wee. Oh, or do you want to do like a bird call? Like hoot hoot.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
Yep.
Hoot hoot.
It only records while you hold it.
Oh.
You have to go and.
We really
this is
gonna
be the best part of this whole stream.
Hoot hoot.
Perfect. Nope. If I woke up in the middle of the night to that sound,
I think it's got a delay though.
Yeah,
it does. Oh, no.
Before they started.
Okay.
It starts recording as soon as it beeps.
Hoot, hoot.
There we go.
Sounds like elephants.
Perfect.
Oh,
perfect.
My God.
Okay.
Can you imagine that, like, in the middle of the night, that sound?
Oh, no.
No. Also, I think we're playing separately.
So did you record yours
yeah,
or you're right?
You're separate.
Oh, we're separate from
yeah.
you.
Yes.
Oh,
what
yeah,
am
I
yes.
doing?
Yeah,
I thought we were on a team.
Rob has been
no.
pushing his buttons. Oh, my God. All right. We will take, we're going to take before and after for 100.
All right. Before and after for 100. Sacrifice it for 3 mana and a piece of it for 1 more.
What's the category?
The category
before
is before and after.
Oh.
Yes.
What is Black Lotus Petal?
That is correct. Black Lotus Petal. You're up. Choose your card.
Oh, you go.
Oh, okay. I'll choose, you know, Strictly Better for 100, please.
Shock. That is such a horrible buzzer.
I can re-record it.
Rob.
What is Lightning Bolt?
That is correct. Good
yes,
work.
Nicely done. I feel like we need an audience to like make them
yeah,
laugh.
Yeah, we have Ruth over there.
Okay, good job, Ruth.
I'm gonna re-record my buzzer.
Okay, re-record your buzzer.
So. Okay.
Shock.
Perfect.
Okay, great.
All right, Rob, you have control of the board.
I would like to go with quotable quotes for 200, please.
Quotable quotes for 200. Some have said there is no subtlety to destruction. You know what? They're dead. I think it was Maria.
Okay, I'm going to guess. I don't know what set we're in. I'm going to guess Nahiri.
That
you
is.
You have to say it as a question.
I mean, what is Nahiri? Who is Nahiri?
Yeah, when? She, Nahiri's a person. She needs to be who.
Okay. When is Nahiri?
Unfortunately, that is incorrect. It is not Nahiri.
Okay.
Rob.
Who is Jaya Ballard Taskmage?
That is correct.
Oh, nice. Yeah. All right. Nice. I'm too in a straw right now.
Yeah. Rob, you're in control of the board.
Quotable quotes for 300, please.
It was probably a lousy spell in the first place.
Wait, I don't know who said it.
What are you doing? I should be penalized.
Who is Jace Bellerin?
It is not Jace Bellerin.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I guessed for you.
It's fine.
Patrick.
Who is Airtie?
That is correct.
Oh
nice
my
job,
God.
Patrick.
Who is that?
What card
is it? Oh my God.
What card is it? It's on Counterspell.
Yeah, that's I knew it was on Counterspell.
It's on the old,
that's
it's one of the old Counterspells.
Old Counterspell.
You have to know who's
Tempest. Yeah.
All right. I was all excited because I knew it was
Counterspell. I'm going to go with Furnace of Wraths for 300.
It's a miracle. One white.
I'm terrible at
you're
this.
You're not. You're going to put all creatures on the bottom of their owner's library. Maria.
What is Terminus?
That is correct.
Yes. We're out of the red. We're out of the red.
Woo! We'll take before and after for 200.
Alright. A 6/6 lifelink death touch worm that gives -1/-1 to all creatures of the chosen type.
What is that one card, you know?
Patrick.
Worm coil engineered plague?
That is correct.
What is worm coil engineered plague?
Why can't I even think of worm coil engine? I just play like Tron for 1,000 years.
I will take Furnace of Wraths for 400, please.
For UU, return all permanents to their owner's hands. Rob.
What is upheaval?
That is correct.
Nice.
Okay, I'm clapping now.
Rob.
Let's go with quotable quotes for 400, please.
Okay. Because I am incapable of tears does not mean I have no need to shed them. Rob.
Who is Karn Silver Golem?
That is correct.
Whoa,
good job.
Karn is so sad. Poor Karn.
I know.
Karn is
so sad.
The saddest.
Creature,
the saddest
is the
robot.
Saddest golem of all time.
Is he like the monster in Frankenstein, kind of?
He's a little. He's
to some extent.
Yeah,
I mean,
a little bit, yeah.
Let's close out quotable quotes here.
All right. Akhan's run, it's the Lurgleif.
Who is Safi Eric's daughter?
That is correct.
Rob is killing her.
I would never have figured out that. Yeah, absolutely
really?
Not.
She was in Time Spiral.
I'm well aware of
sure.
that. Did I say I was good at this game?
Let's go with Manalus Lands for 100, please.
All right, here we go. Recently banned due to too many free Eldrazi. Maria.
What is Eldrazi?
No.
What is Eye of Eugene?
Eye of Eugene.
Eye of Eugene. That's correct. It is indeed Eye of Eugene.
I almost said the wrong one.
I know you did.
Oh my God.
Pick one.
Oh, let's try Keyword Madness for 100, all please.
Right. When discarded, it may be cast. Rob.
What is madness?
That is correct.
That makes sense.
The easiest.
Let's go with before and after for 300.
Before and after for 300. A ward that creates four squirrels while flipping your library until it finds a basic. Rob.
What is deranged hermit druid?
That is correct.
Great one.
Let's continue down the line in before and after.
By the way, this is my favorite category to create.
Yeah.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Suspended, draw 3 if there are 20 or more cards in a graveyard. Rob.
What is Ancestral Visions of Beyond?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we got there a second too late.
Oh, this is a great category.
Let's go to 500 on
that. All right. Return all artifacts and enchantments to the battlefield, including this black land. Rob.
What is Open the Vaults of Whispers?
That's correct. Yep.
Rob is running away with his game.
That one was a chuckle, and that one was awesome. That's pretty good. Really, really good one.
Let's go with Keyword Madness for 200. All right.
Tap a creature to add one mana of its color to your mana pool. Rob.
What is Convoke?
Correct.
It's not strictly accurate.
Oh my god, oh my gosh.
You failed on every level there.
Oh, wow. I switched around the clues here. All right. Well, let's do 300.
I wonder what it is.
It's supposed to be copy the spell for each other spell that has been cast this turn. Maria.
What is Storm?
Hey!
We'll go with, let's go with Strictly Better for 200.
Strictly Better for 200. Ancestral Visions. Patrick.
Ancestral Recall.
That is correct.
What is Ancestral Recall?
Yes.
I'm terrible.
Yes. Patrick, you have control of the board.
Let's close out Furnace of Wraths.
All right, for 500. 6RR can't be countered. That's red, by the way. Can't be countered. Destroy all artifacts, creatures, creatures and lands, not creates, all creatures and lands. They can't be regenerated. Rob.
What is Obliterate?
That is correct.
I can give you the flavor text.
All right, Rob, you're up.
The flavor text.
The flavor text is also great.
The flavor text
card.
Is great.
Super good.
The flavor text.
For his daughter, Baron created a funeral pyre of all Teleria.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, it's
boy, it's harsh.
The whole story is like really like messed up.
Baron,
it's like,
the Baron story in general is
yeah,
is crazy. Let's go with Keyword Madness for 400.
Upon entering the battlefield, attach a germ. Rob.
Living weapon. What is living weapon?
Correct. Yep.
Keyword Madness for 5.
This creature is a zombie squirrel illusion advisor. Rob.
What is Changeling?
That's correct.
Oh, smart.
Mm-hmm. Let's hit...
Rob is crushing everybody.
Manaless Lands for 200.
You get a swamp, and you get a swamp. Everyone gets a swamp. Patrick.
What is Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth?
Correct.
Manaless Lands for 300.
Merit Lage works beneath the surface. Megan and Maria.
What is Dark Depths?
Correct.
Sure, Manaless Lands for 400.
Mulligan to 1 for this land in Vintage Dredge. Rob.
What is Bazaar of Baghdad?
Correct.
Wow, never heard of that one.
It's super good.
That's a shame.
Yeah,
that is
really
a shame.
I will hit 500 for Manaless Lands.
This church causes some unholy triggers. Maria.
What is the Roman Catholic Church?
Oh my god.
I mean, I'm just saying.
That is probably true.
600 points to you.
Patrick.
What is the Tabernacle at Pendrel Vale?
That's correct.
Good all lord. Right.
Got a Strictly Better here.
300 on Strictly Better.
Counterspell. Rob.
What is Mana Drain?
Correct. It's a very fair card.
400 or 500?
400.
Mind Control. Patrick.
What is Treachery?
I'll give you that.
Yeah,
yeah. Treachery.
Yeah, yes.
I believe that we would also
control
accept
magic.
Control magic.
Control.
Yeah.
Both of them are strictly better.
They are both
control.
Strictly better. Yeah, that's
yes.
True. All right, and for 500 we have Leaf Gilder. Rob.
What is Llanowar Elves?
Correct.
There are a lot
or Orphan Hornells
are
a lot of mistake. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of things better than Leaf Gilder.
The problem with Leaf Gilder is it's a 2/1.
Oh, I guess
so,
that's true.
Right. And so it's like Llanowar Elves is better in the sense that the thing that it does it's better
that's
at.
Right.
But yeah.
I probably should have tried to find a 1/1. Is there a 1/1 for 2 mana that creates a green?
That just taps for single green?
There's an elk.
Like Dawn Treader Elk? Or?
No, Golden Hind is the same card as
Leaf Gilder.
As Leaf Gilder.
Okay. Golden Hind.
Never mind.
Yeah.
It's actually really hard to find cards that are absolutely strictly better than another
right.
card. Like, it's actually really
Wealth
hard to magic.
Is, like, it does the only job that you care about exactly better. So.
All right. Well, anyways, thank you all for playing Jeopardy.
Rob crushed us.
Yeah, Rob.
What
Rob
was the final
Rob?
Score,
Final score is Rob with $5,600.
Oh, gosh.
Yep. Patrick with $1,900, and yep. Megan and Maria with $900, which you can use to buy 3 Judge Foil Force of Wills. Rob is selling.
Perfect.
Oh, wait, oh, no, they're sold already. Yeah. Sorry.
Somebody suggested Boreal Druid as well.
Oh, yeah. Boreal
Druid,
Druid
is also
a good call.
Yeah, it also makes colorless. It's worse than Lanowar Elf in every way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, is it still, doesn't it make the it makes the Eldrazi mana, though, now, doesn't it? Or does it make still make colorless?
It makes Eldrazi.
It always made colorless.
It makes actual colorless,
actual
not
colorless.
Generic.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Generic. You
generic
can't
doesn't
make.
Exist.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
No. Generic's a cost. It exists.
Sure.
But you can't make it.
Final score: Rob wins. MTA is going to hell. Accurate.
Swan die.
Accurate. So what's going to happen now? We've done our geo, our magic, the Jeoparding, and now we're going to do judge questions. So I'm going to transition over here. Judge April's going to get in. And we are going to field some questions for our judges. Okay, we are just about ready here to begin the official judging of Judge Fest 2016. If you can't see me, I'm hiding behind this computer.
This is Leon and Relic Ward, I'm pretty sure.
Hey, judges.
No, it can't be Leon and Relic.
All right, everybody.
Quit having fun.
All right. We're about to get down to business.
We have entered Judge Business. We have entered the round now of Judge Fest 2016, where we ask the judges some questions which we have obtained on Twitter, live on twitch.tv/magicTheAmaturing, or people have emailed to us. So the judges will buzz in when they think they know the answer. I will leave it up to the judges themselves to self-police this, okay? So call your each other if you think the answer is incorrect.
This can only end well.
Yeah,
this can
a great idea.
Yeah.
It's a Minority Report kind of situation, but we're encouraged to say the other reporter is bad.
Yes, yes. That
terrible.
Is correct.
My turn.
If we find out that you were doing that, though, we'll send you an official scolding in the mail later.
And you do have my address because you're at my house.
Yes, exactly.
So we're going to start with a question that came to us on our email, magicTheAmaturing@gmail.com. This person apologizes because this uses Pan Glacial Worm, the card that judges like to pretend doesn't exist. Is that true?
Can we bring the card up on the screen? Like,
what card?
Pan Glacial Worm.
I'm sorry, what card?
Are we able to bring it up?
I get it.
Can you grab your phone so that we can pull up cards?
Pan Glacial Word.
I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about.
You're trying real hard, April.
I think they're all being common.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
God damn it, judges.
Yep. They are all trolling you real hard.
We are all agreeing with the sentiment that this card does not exist.
So I'll read it. Pan Glacial Worm is 5 green for a creature worm. It's a 9/5 with trample. It says, while you're searching your library, you may play Pan Glacial Worm from your library.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay, well, I first of all, don't know what that means. Second of all, here's the question. Supposing that I have resolved Faded Infatuation on a Panglacial Worm, I then activate Soul Sculptor on the Panglacial Worm token. If I then cast Primal Command, selecting the modes of put target non-creature permanent on top of its owner's library, and search your library for a creature card, reveal it, and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library, my target for this spell is the Panglacial Worm token. The question is this. As I am searching my library for a creature card, am I allowed to cast the Panglacial Worm token? Why or why not? Yes, Judge Rob.
You can't cast things that aren't cards. Well, you can cast copies, but you can't cast tokens. And even if you could, this is dumb. Like, so the problem with most Panglacial Worm questions is the right way to use Panglacial Worm is just cast it while you're fetching with a fetch land. Like, it's... The actual situations that people ask these tricky, complicated Panglacial Worm questions
will
on...
actually never happen.
literally will never happen unless you're engineering them in, like, an EDH game, at which point play whatever way has the most fun for you, because...
But isn't that how, like, 99% of hard judge questions are? Like,
yes and no. There's the recent Great Aurora one, which we'll bring up later. But that's a real hard judge question and comes up in standard right now.
All right, so I've got the next question. Okay. Can Rest in Peace prevent me from getting creatures into play via Grenzo Dungeon Warder? Judge Rob.
Yes. Grenzo Dungeon Warden's Oracle text says that it puts it into play from your graveyard, I'm pretty sure.
All right.
And if it's not in your graveyard, when his yeah, he's looking for it. Yeah.
Yeah, you put the bottom card of your library into your graveyard, and as soon as you try it...
No. He doesn't care where it goes. He doesn't say put it into play from your graveyard.
It just says put that card into play.
Yeah, and so he tracks it because he doesn't care where it actually ended up. Yeah, the replacement effect put it in the zone. He doesn't care which zone it actually ended up going to. He just says put that card into play. He doesn't say put it into play from your graveyard.
So the final answer is
no. Rest in Peace does not stop.
All right, we'll split the difference on that. 5 to Rob, 5 to Patrick.
5 to Patrick.
All right, I have another question here from email. This question is, hey y'all, is how it starts, just FYI.
Oh, good.
I cast a Precursor Golem. Once it has resolved, I cast a Rite of Replication, playing the kicker cost, targeting my Precursor Golem. Once that has resolved, I cast another Rite of Replication, paying the kicker cost, targeting one of my Precursor Golems. How many Precursor Golems do I have, and how many Golem tokens do I have?
I need a calculator for this. Preferably a spreadsheet.
Calculator is a spreadsheet.
So Rite of Replication makes 5 copies, right?
5 copies. Yeah. And it targets all 3 of your golems.
Yep.
So it makes
15
copies.
Yep. Note that the golems are different from each other. There's Precursor Golem and there's Golem tokens. So
sure, but they're targeting the Precursor Golem.
Sure, but it's
going to make 15 total golems, but five of those are Precursors.
You're going to start with 6 Precursor Golems, and then you're going to end up with 12 non-Precursor Golems, right?
Yep.
Yes.
And so you now have 6 Precursor Golems.
Yep.
That when you cast the next Rite of Replication,
we'll target all 12 Golems.
You'll have 6 triggers.
Each of them are going to target.
Rite of Replication.
Yep.
For it. Right.
Yeah. So it's exponential.
That
like it's
card though. Hmm? Is it going to say specifically when it targets that particular Precursor Golem?
The Precursor Golem.
Or no, it says when it targets any Golem.
Yeah,
right?
When it targets Golem. Okay, so you can pull up the Oracle if you want.
Yeah, this question generates very large
numbers
of things.
We have Lee's in our chat from WotC, and let's see, he has an answer here. it's a little website for it.
A specific website just for this question? Great.
Yeah, he's a Precursor Golem calculator.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yes. Awesome. Yes.
So the question is answered by, your opponent is probably dead.
Yeah.
Okay,
you could easily cast a Rakdos Charm, you could just get Rakdos.
Yeah, I mean, you might just be dead from Rakdos Charm. Yeah.
Or
you will be dead from
Rakdos
Charm.
Who's the 6 cost guy that does the same thing? He has Transmute. When he enters the battlefield, your opponents, each player loses 1 life for each creature they control.
Hell if I know.
Yeah, no kidding.
He's a 2/4 common from Ravnica City of Guilds. He has Transmute, which is why he's relevant. He has a bunch of other text, and he's got Transmute for 6.
This is all I'm hearing.
Lee, 10 points.
10 points. Good. 10 points
yeah,
to Lee.
Lee gets 10 points. Lee is now a part of this.
10 points to Lee.
It's like
pretty
sharp, right?
Yeah.
All right, so do you want to start checking Twitch chat? If you guys have questions, go ahead and type them into chat, and Maria will grab good ones off of there. And in the meantime, I'll keep going off of ones that we got from Twitter. So the next one from Twitter is, are split-second spells copied and replicated by cards like Hive Mind?
I'm a teapot.
Yeah, yes.
Okay. Yes.
All right,
yeah.
Sweet.
Do you want context?
Answer is yes.
Go
the
ahead,
question
give us
is,
a little context.
So split-second prevents anybody from casting spells or activating abilities while that spell is on the stack. However, Hive Mind is a trigger and copies it for everything or for everybody else. So the trigger goes on the stack above the split-second spell, and then once that trigger resolves, it creates all the copies, and then those all resolve along with the original spell.
And it's specifically not mana abilities. So if you have somebody tries to extirpate a what is the buyback it's like 1 in a red, it does 2 damage, and you can buy it back if you gain.
Oh, punishing fire.
Punishing fire.
Yep, you
so
can activate.
Punishing fires or tries to extirpate your punishing fire. You can activate Grove because it's a mana ability.
Yep.
Give them a light.
Yep. I actually had that judge call at an SCG open like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And it was the most confusing thing for the player appealing that. I was the head judge, and they were like, no, there's no way that works that way. And I'm like, and
then,
no.
Then you ask them, well, you can use morph to counter that, right? Right? Because you can use Willbender to move it around, so you ask them, how do you pay the cost for Willbender if you couldn't activate mana abilities? And they go, oops. Oh, yeah.
They probably weren't thinking about Willbender.
All right, right.
We're thinking about Morph in general.
Right.
We're in the weeds, judges. I mean,
I could get a bigger shovel and we could dig this hole deeper.
I want to answer, by the way, the answer is some absurd number of golem tokens.
Right, that's why we're like
233286. Precursor golems and 3359242 3-3.
Yeah. Okay. I actually had it down on my phone screen.
Uh-huh. Sure you did.
So I feel like I definitely.
All right. Here's a question for you from Twitch.
Yep.
Hey, judges. Who does?
Leisure.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
In Twitch is Leisure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like.
Hey, judges. If Kozilek the Great Distortion is my commander, am I able to tap Command Tower for mana? If so, what kind? Oh my.
Can I get the Oracle on Command Tower?
Yeah, I need to see it to you.
Yes.
I think it just taps for one mana of any color of your commander's color, and colorless is not a color, so...
Oracle text on Command Tower is add to your mana pool one mana of any color in your commander's color identity.
So, yeah, you do not... You can tap it. It won't do anything useful.
Yep.
All right.
It will go try to add and then just not add anything.
Yep. All right, next question. You have one, Megan?
Yes, I've got another one here from Twitter.
I was the person to ask for Oracle.
All right, if I enchant a basic forest with a Utopia Sprawl, can I use both mana produced to cast Imperiosaur?
No.
All right, care to...
The thing that is producing mana for Utopia Sprawl is Utopia Sprawl. It's a triggered ability of Utopia Sprawl that says whenever enchanted land is tapped, add one mana of the chosen color to your mana pool. That mana comes from Utopia Sprawl. It didn't come from a basic land.
Excellent. All right, Maria, do you have another one from Twitch?
Sure, we'll just ask a general question, which you can all answer. What is the hardest card to deal with as a judge? And I'll give points to the best story. If you have any personal memories with a particularly difficult ruling, for example.
I could name some least favorite cards. I mean, we're all just answering. Yeah.
All right. But I buzzed in. So. Yeah. I have priority here. Yeah. I think the one that probably was like the most difficult in like terms of like making a tournament run and like long drawn out things was Obsidat Ghost. The Obsidat that blinked into the zone.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Ghost
yeah.
Dad.
No, that not.
No,
ghost
no, no,
dad.
Not the
no,
original
not ghost
one.
Dad.
The second one.
Oh, okay, the second one.
Yeah.
Ghost stepdad.
Obsidat
Granddaddy. I don't know what he is. But he would be exiled on your opponent's turn, and then he would come back, and people would forget it, and like it happened so many times, like the first three tournaments, it was like it was really egregious. It was super terrible.
I think the most consistently forgotten thing that that everybody runs into is Bob triggers. Mm-hmm. It's no longer a major issue, but people still inevitably forget it all the time.
Dark Confidant for those people that don't
Bob,
know all the
Dark
names
Confidant.
Because
yeah,
this is a beginner's magic show, Patrick.
Yeah,
Dark Confidant trigger. People have a tendency to forget that repetitively.
Yeah. I play Legacy and Sulfuric Vortex is exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, Lee says, Dark Confidant was a huge problem in judge philosophy for a while. We used to give a game loss for forgetting the trigger.
It was all triggers gave warnings if you missed them. And so I remember the first modern Grand Prix, GP Lincoln, Nebraska, was, we definitely had one guy rack a game loss in a single round due to Dark Confidant triggers. He was tired, he missed three in the same round, and got a game loss, and the judge who delivered it pulled him aside and was like, seriously, dude, you need to pay more attention. Yeah. We don't want to give you this game loss, but that's the way policy works. And the guy's like, no, I understand. And he stopped missing them, but it would have escalated really fast.
Yeah. I have no idea how many contortions the IPG, the Infraction Procedure Guide, has gotten through just because of Bob. Like, just because of dealing with triggers like this that are beneficial, but like kind of feel like they can be non-beneficial at times.
Yeah.
It's just kind of messy.
Yeah, the lapsy triggers are the worst.
There's a huge number of, like, the flip cards, the werewolves, that caused a lot of problems during, like, the lapsing trigger era.
Yeah.
The like, four-month era where lapsing triggers were a thing.
And there was also Pyreheart Wolf, the one that...
The one that couldn't be blocked. Yeah.
When he attacked, he said...
Creatures you control got menace, right?
Yeah, creatures you control gain menace. But the problem is that under the trigger policy at the time, it was really, really bad. If you didn't announce his trigger, your opponent could block. And then you'd be like, but you couldn't block. I didn't announce this trigger. But, like, it didn't do anything yet.
Follow-up question. What is the ruling now for missing a Bob trigger?
Nothing. So there's no penalty. Your opponent may choose to put it on the stack if they want, which solves everything, basically.
Yeah.
It's not detrimental, because you're playing Dark Confidant for that trigger. That trigger is beneficial, obviously, or else you wouldn't play that guy. And
I like my 2/1s for 2 that are just do nothing.
Just do nothing. They're not even ambush wipers.
Yeah, like...
Yeah. Especially in Modern.
But there are circumstances where your opponent wants you to get it. Your one life. Your opponent's
see
like, yes.
can blow you out.
Yes.
I've won a lot of games that
yep.
way.
Yep. And so your opponent may choose to put it on the stack immediately, and then that'll resolve it. Mm-hmm. And they can actually call over at what would be an inopportune time for you, as long as they catch it within a turn. And so you're like, oh, I'm at 4, I can fetch. They're like, I would like you to get Dark Confidant trigger now that you've removed a land from your library.
All right.
Is it an acceptable shortcut when casting Mind's Desire to shuffle once and then rip off the top X Storm?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that saves so much time. There's no reason that's not okay.
It's kind of the same thing as like with the Zenith cards. Like, don't they typically require you to shuffle twice?
Yeah. Green Sun Zenith. If you have not shuffled twice with Green Sun Zenith, then you've been doing the same thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So this question came to us by Twitter. Right. My skin invasion on my Felidar cub. No other enchantments. Sack the cub, targeting invasion. Do I get skin shredder?
So this is the new
one
red
transform.
One red mim. All right.
So you shouldn't. So you're going to sacrifice the cub, put its ability on the stack, targeting the skin invasion, and then as state-based action, skin shredder or whatever
skin invasion
falls off.
Right,
yeah, it goes directly
right
to the graveyard.
So it never has a chance to...
So this is also a trigger. When enchanted creature dies, mm-hmm. so there's two triggers that are on the there's activated ability Felidar Cub on the stack, and then there's trigger from skin invasion above it, and then state-based actions throw skin invasion into your graveyard.
And the Felidar Cub one is just countered.
Well, no, the Skin Invasion has a trigger.
Well, no, right. But I'm saying, like, because the card is not on the battlefield, that ability is just countered.
Well, no. Actually, no. It should put it on the battlefield, right? Because Skin Invasion says...
No, I'm saying...
Like, go back to Skin
Invasion. I'm sorry, the activated ability is countered.
Yeah, the activated ability is going to be encountered.
Skin Invasion
doesn't care. When enchanted creature dies, return Skin Invasion to the battlefield.
So the ability's still there, and it'll just
put it out of the battlefield. Sorry, I thought it was something else. There's other cards that do similar things. Yeah, so you should get it back.
Yep.
All right. Well, so you do get
that.
A 3/4.
I would give that to April. She
all right.
She pointed out the correct thing.
Okay. April, climbing back up.
I think you should just garnish Rob's points, actually.
Perfect. I think he has
we'll
enough points
from
Jeopardy.
From
like, we don't need to give Rob any more points.
Do the points carry over and we're doing these in only units of 10? I'm done.
I'm just going to read.
Yeah. All right.
But every answer we give, we garnish from your points.
Sure.
Great question here.
As long
here.
As it's only in units of 10, you can answer as many of these as you want.
If I crib swap Azusa, lost but seeking, what are the odds on having reunited her with her family?
This is a flavor judge question.
Zero? Like, isn't Crib Swap the changelings come over? Like,
the changelings just, come and just yoink?
Yeah, she gets taken out of the crib and replaced with the changelings so that she can be raised by the changelings. But
and I'm pretty sure her family is not a bunch of changelings.
I mean,
so
they might be?
Is there any way we can call in Ben Stark for this one? He notably loves answering flavor questions, so...
I wish that we could.
There was like a recent video sequence of LSV asking Ben Stark flavor questions, and he just refuses to answer. So he's like asking a question, and then he's just like silent, just like nothing.
There's a good one right here, man.
All right.
So this one I hear a lot. It's a common question. What is the ruling, and what should I do if my opponent draws too many cards after a mulligan at an FNM at my LGS?
What's the ruling, or what should you do?
I suppose you... What you should do is call a judge.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the immediate answer, is call a judge. But what is the judge going to do? I mean, like, they're probably going to...
At FNM, I just shuffle away
a card.
Yeah, if they drew 7 instead of 6, I would just shuffle a random card away.
Yep.
That gets everybody playing the game faster, and it brings it back to where it should be.
Well,
as far as
I would do is I take that card and I set it on top of their library and say, do you want a mulligan to 5?
Yeah.
And they say, no. And I go, okay, shuffle your library. They say yes, and I go, shuffle those cards in. It's one less shuffle. Save them a minute, but yeah, that one card is going to get shuffled in. Yeah.
It's different if you're playing at
it is different
at competitive.
GP,
yes,
yep.
Where your opponent gets the choice to either take one of your cards after seeing your hand, or you are forced to mulligan. Correct.
Yep, but they don't get to see your hand first. They decide before they see your hand whether or not you're going to be down.
Yeah.
Down an additional card, or whether they're going to take one of your choice.
All right, so I have one.
One of your choices got to be always be better, right?
It depends on... If it's game 2 and they're playing Manalus Dredge, I will him to Turok them.
Yeah, all right.
Against other deck cell thoughts.
Yeah, right. That's fair.
So what happens if I brainstorm in my upkeep with a Sylvan Library in play?
This is a very common question that's answered a lot.
Yep. Anything with, like, drawing a bunch of cards in the upkeep with Sylvan Library is a fairly common question.
So you're the legacy player of the three of us,
so...
You know, I would just tell players, like, you just keep the cards separate. Like, people always think, like, hey, I need to call over a judge so I can mix the brainstorm cards into my hand so it's not obvious.
It's not our job to verify things.
But
like
it's not the judge's job. So, like, your job as a player is if you brainstorm... You just keep those brainstorm cards separate, and then you can put back
some mixture
cards.
Of them. But
But it's just going to be clear which cards went back.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the key with any Sylvan Library question is that the cards that you draw before you resolve Sylvan Library in its entirety just need to be separate from the rest of your hand.
Yep.
If they get mixed in with your hand,
you can't put them back.
Yeah.
Like, sucks, but that's the way it is.
Yep. And that's the same in general with the Sylvan cards. There's a complicated fix that. Just doesn't actually come up that much. People who play Sylvan Library, for the most part, pretty careful about it.
Yeah.
No.
All right, here we go. Why are you allowed to Goblin Dark Dwellers back the busted side of Boom Bust?
Oh my god, I love doing this so much. I've done this so much in Modern. It's like one of my favorite things to do.
Getcha.
Why? Why are you allowed?
Hey, this is my call out to Wizards to reprint Armageddon in Modern. We need it so bad.
But why?
Because the card in the graveyard has actually 2 converted mana cost. It has a mana cost of 2 and a mana cost of 6. And so it says, can you cast it? Well, yes, you can cast it. And then when you cast it, you choose which modes you want to choose. And the mode you choose is bust. So.
Yep. Because that's how split cards work. It's just 2 different pieces of split cards.
So it would be much easier if Wizards would just print a 3 mana Armageddon. I mean, it would just be so much easier for everybody.
I'd play that all day. 4 copies of it. All the time.
And Snapcaster.
Would it cost red, white, and a colorless mana symbol?
Probably.
Yes.
Yeah.
The hardest thing
to
cast possible.
An actual X, yeah?
Yeah.
The Eldrazi,
Do you have one, Megan? I've got one in the email. In the old email bank over here. Okay. We have lots of people. All right, so this one's pretty long.
Oh God! I can see it from here. I don't even want to know.
Okay, hi guys. So I have a question about a scenario involving a Kalitas in play and casting something like Flaying Trendrils. Now with 2 replacement effects, trying to exile any creatures the player without Kalitas controls, the correct solution is that he or she picks which effect replaces them. The following article. Oh, there's an article link. Oh God. Brings the scenario up and asks if it's okay to just say yes if your opponent asks if Kalitas exiles their creatures. I want to know if this is less rules lawyering preying on a player who knows less about the rules and more like lying via omission. To me, it seems as if my opponent's asking, so do you get the zombies or are they just exiled? If I answer yes, I have willingly misled them. Of course, in any fuzzy situation, a player can and should call a judge, but if a player just omits information on the state of the game, are they not committing an infraction?
So if you told them something that was actually outright wrong, if Kalitas was alone on the battlefield and they said, I killed your creature, the creature died, do I get a zombie? And you told them, no, you don't get a zombie with Kalitas alone out, That's bad and wrong.
Yep.
Telling them a legal outcome and then hoping that they choose that legal outcome, like, is fine. You can suggest that they do something that is perfectly legal but a bad decision, right?
I think I would probably discourage this kind of behavior.
At FNM, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
Like at FNM, represent everything as clearly as possible. Yep. At FNM, the objective is both players are trying to play as close to a platonic ideal game of Magic as possible. At competitive RAL, you can bait your opponent into mistakes sometimes by asking them questions or giving them suggestions that they don't have to follow.
Yep.
Oftentimes somebody lightning bolts me and I have a planeswalker and I say, would you like to redirect this? And I think it's a bad decision for them. And then they do. And I'm like, okay, great. I gave you a legal option and you took it.
I gave you a path you chose to walk it.
So can we rename FNM to Platonic Ideal Magic instead?
That'd be fantastic.
That sounds great.
I would love it.
Rolls off the tongue. All
right. Right?
So this is a great question. What is your favorite thing about the Oracle text of Anime Dead?
Oh my god.
Okay, Rob goes first.
Enchant creature card in a graveyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, April, what's your favorite part?
For me, my favorite part is like how it fits on a card. It's so majestic and how like tiny the font is. It's like a joke. Like Wizards was like, everybody like when they're putting it on the card, they were like snickering to themselves, and I love that.
What language is Eternal Masters printed in? Japanese, which it fits because the characters are more dense. What European language is Eternal Masters?
It can't be German. Anime Dead doesn't hardly fits on a card in English. Is it Italian?
I don't know.
This is what the internet is for.
I'd be really interested to see a non-English, non-Japanese Anime Dead from Eternal Masters because, holy cow.
But yeah, I mean, I think they actually said, like, when they printed it in Graveborn that it was, like, a joke, right? They just wanted to print Anime Dead on a card just because it was so funny.
Well, and their character limit, Anime Dead fits the German character
limit.
It's
just English, Japanese, and Chinese simplified.
Oh.
So,
okay,
English
is the
densest.
Long one. Yeah, or is the least dense.
Or the least dense,
yeah.
Text-wise.
So, the thing is that it fits the... If you look at how small they are willing to make cards in German, they... Which is, I think, the longest Latinized language, or Latin character set language, then Anime Dead fits within those constraints. And in Graveborn, it was only in English.
Only in English. Yeah.
So the character limit on cards is actually more about German than it is about English. Yeah.
All right.
I just love how, like, if you look at, like, an alpha or beta version of Anime Dead, it's so simple. It's like enchanted creature in a graveyard or something like that. It's -1, -0, or something. It's like super easy, and everybody can just look at it and knows exactly what the card does.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do. I was playing in like revised or whatever, and it made perfect sense to me. Like,
what if you?
I didn't have to look up any rules to figure out how Anime Dead works.
So
if I looked at the card now, I would have no idea what's happening.
Right, but the problem is that it's behaved inconsistently with creatures of protection from black throughout its history. Like what happens if you try to reanimate Karmic Guide, who's in the set with it?
Cry.
All right.
Moving on from Anime Dead.
If I Restoration Angel a Thought Not Seer on my turn, do they draw after the Thought Not Seer trigger occurs, or do I choose the order in which the triggers stack? Also, does this change if I do it on the opponent's turn?
You should choose.
Yep.
All right.
And it doesn't matter whose turn it is.
Yeah,
so they're both your triggers, so you get to order them how you want.
And they're both trying to go on the stack at the same time. They can't go on the stack during the Restoration Angel trigger ability, which is something people don't realize,
like,
is triggers only wait to go on the stack until the next time.
Yep.
And they all go on at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. They all trigger at some point during the resolution of a Restoration Angel's ability, but the next time somebody gets priority is
when
they start putting those triggers
on the stack.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really good.
Next question. If you could change any part of the game rules, what would you change and why? This is for all of our judges.
What would we change?
Do I have a time machine?
Yeah, you can change whatever you want and access to a TARDIS.
Oh my, I can hear Mark Rosewater like panicking right now.
He's
smoking out against time machines so many times.
Well, that's the question. Like, there's things that I would love to change, but I can't. There's things that, like, if I'm locked into not having a time machine, I would just fire the state-based action that applies to Rasputin and Dreamweaver, because that's dumb. But, like, give him a triggered ability. Who cares? But the if I could go back in time and change anything,
yeah, change the way that's the question. Work. Oh, lands. Okay.
How
land drops. There would be a turn-based action at the start of each main phase that allows you to make all your land drops. And either you use that or you lose it. You can't play spell and make a land drop.
None of the kind of back and forth.
Yeah, there's like if you draw cards, you'll be able to make a land drop in your second main phase at the start of your main phase because it's a turn-based action that produces the land.
Yeah.
But like and it would actually there be no difference between putting a land into play and playing a land, mm-hmm. which is a difference right now. That turn-based action would be put a land into play, and that would mean that there's no
and like, so. And so things like burgeoning would get everything then, because there would be no difference.
Yeah, there'd be no difference. Burgeoning and Horn of Greed would trigger off everything.
Okay.
And then there'd just be a simple rule for lands work this way. Other cards behave the same way as that turn-based action. Just simplify all that. Remove the special action of playing a land.
I actually kind of like that, because there's a lot of... at one of the commander groups that I play in, there's a lot of people who are fairly new to the game mm-hmm. that get really confused by the difference between putting a land into play and playing a land, particularly in context of some of the crazy decks that show up that have things that care about lands being played or lands being put into play. So
and then I
do like that. I think that's cool.
All your additional land drop tracking would just be that turn-based action is two lands instead of one. Do them now. Okay. Great. You used up all your land drops for the turn in your turn-based action.
Yeah. I know a lot of people talk about like how they wish that like there were not instant and sorcery. They were
Flash was just an
ability on sorceries to make them act like instants.
That'd be pretty okay.
But I think the one that... I wish that like the card type, like you know like we have Tribal? I wish that had been like just like a kind of one of the card types from the very beginning. Instead of just like, because like Tribal kind of plays really messily in the rules, like.
I mean, if you want to do that, you can just say that creature types can go on all cards. Fire Tribal entirely.
I'd be fine with that.
It just instead of having to make a new card type that shares.
Yeah,
the
so
that's
like
card
an
types,
elf instant.
Yeah, you can just But that's the point is that, that you have so you have a pool of card types that are the creature types, and these can go on anything.
Yeah,
I think that'd be great.
You keep lands have land types, like spells have spell types. Yeah. You have.
You wouldn't even need to have creatures as a specific type. It would just have power and toughness in the corner, and therefore it's a creature.
Yeah. Well, you probably still want.
You probably still have a creature type just because.
Define how you play spells. So.
Sure. I mean, it would probably really have changed how the game developed.
Yeah.
How the words and the rules came out. But.
Well, you want creature as a type because that tells you how you cast it. The problem with Tribal is it's a card type that doesn't tell you how you cast it. That's the real problem with it. Because Tribal can't stand alone.
Sure.
And every other card type gives you rules for how to play.
You can't just have, like, card type Tribal Elf.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And so it doesn't behave like a card type, and it's kind of weird.
Yeah. All
right.
So.
All right, we've got another one. So this has to do with when a permanent is phased out, or cards with phasing. So while it's phased out, could it still be called a permanent you own? And when exactly does it phase in?
We would need context for this. Like it's,
there's a lot that goes into answering a question about anything that's phased out.
Well, yeah, I mean the phase in is at the beginning of the untap step. That's just the way the phase in works. But why do you? What card cares about a permanent you own?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that's
we don't have a context. Okay, we've got another question though, which is what is the shortest amount of rules text or like text on a card that leads to the most judge calls?
Rules text.
Or text on a card. Just like what's the shortest amount of text that leads to the greatest number of judge calls, do you think?
I think
two words is about the minimum. Assuming you count a number as a word.
Right, but I think they're saying
one word is the minimum.
What leads to the most calls, not necessarily what could lead to a call.
Well,
ratio
be?
What is the smallest amount of text that gets people to yell judge the most? Like in practice.
In practice? The word cascade.
Yeah.
A spell with only a card with only cascade can generate judge calls where everything else needs like either two words or a word and a number for the most part, mm-hmm. I think.
All right.
I think if we're not going off of a keyword, I would say something like this is one I think we'll all be familiar
rest
with.
In peace.
If a card or token will be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. That generates a lot of questions like when you kill it, where the hell do things go?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so banding is another example, perhaps. Yeah. But that's also what banding does. Okay.
Yeah.
So, another question for you here. Let me go and look. This is from Twitch.
Actual calls about banding. Nobody plays it.
Nobody plays banding.
How
I mean, I keep getting questions about it in my seminars, but like that's...
Sure. but it's so old, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Whereas Cascade is something that actually happens quite often.
Yep. Yeah.
How does Stryonic Resonator work with Ice Cauldron?
The hell is the text on Ice Cauldron?
It's so long. It's like an anime dead type card now, I think.
I can try and find it for you.
Well, no, Ice Cauldron probably has had the most different Oracle texts in history.
No, I thought like Mindslaver. Isn't like Mindslaver or something like card?
It's Ice Cauldron.
I mean,
Ice Cauldron at one point got functional errata with every major Oracle.
All right, we're going to go ahead and read the text of Ice Cauldron.
Good luck.
Okay, jeez. I'm going to take it and need a lozenge halfway through. X, tap. Put a charge counter on Ice Cauldron and exile a non-land card from your hand. You may cast that card for as long as it remains exiled. Note the type and amount of mana spent to pay this activation cost. Activate this ability only if there are no charge counters on Ice Cauldron. Tap. Remove a charge counter from Ice Cauldron. Add Ice Cauldron's last noted type and amount of mana to your mana pool. Spend this mana only to cast the last card exiled with Ice Cauldron cast for.
You know, they could just make this a keyword called layaway X.
I'd also like to point out that the question is irrelevant because Stryonic Resonator doesn't interact with Ice Cauldron at all. Because Stryonic Resonator deals with triggered abilities,
yeah.
And all of these are activated.
Are there things that copy activated abilities?
Rings of Bright Hearth.
Rings of Bright Hearth is the big one.
Yeah.
All right.
It's Rings of Bright Hearth.
Wouldn't that be like a layaway keyword? You could just call it layaway.
Yeah, I mean, like
it just. It like
it's
kind of
like suspend.
It's a weird suspend variant that doesn't need to exist, really.
Yeah.
You can spend some mana now and some mana later.
I guess it's also Echo as well. It's basically spending mana now and spending mana later.
And this if you made it into a mechanic, there's a mechanic in Dominion that is my least favorite mechanic in Dominion that is this. Mm-hmm. It's called Debt. You take a bunch of debt tokens and then you pay them off during your next buys. And so you could get like a Debt 9 card, take a bunch of debt tokens, and then pay them off during your next buys. And you're like...
Well, I got a thing.
Yeah, take the best spell with debt. Like, good.
Sure.
Big old credit card debt. Don't care.
Do we lose
this? All right. Nope. We got it. So, question. This is just a general one that we probably get a lot, but if you all had, like, one quick piece of advice for anybody thinking about becoming a judge or looking to become a judge, what would that advice be?
Judge.
Yeah.
The judge program in general certifies you for doing the things that you're already doing.
Yep.
So help out at FNM, take some calls, and help out at your weekly tournaments. Ask somebody who's head judging your PPTQ if you can help out at the event. Like, the advice is do it. And then my next piece of advice is get a mentor.
I was going to say shadow somebody.
Yeah. Shadow somebody. As an expansion of what Rob said, like, one of the most important things about being a judge in your community is actually being a part of the community. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that approach all of us asking, you know, hey, what do I have to do to become a judge? And you might ask them, you know, where do you play regularly? Or are you a part of a, you know, local community? Do you talk with your community a lot? And they go, not really. And you're kind of like, well, that's a huge part of being a judge, being active in your Magic community.
This thing that we're doing, where we're hanging out answering rules questions from the Magic community.
This is judging.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, this is as much judging as going to an event and watching people play Magic. Like, so, that would be my advice.
All right, here's a very serious question. Do higher-ranking judges get cooler uniforms, like more stripes and stars, or even epaulettes?
Shut up, Rob.
there's a generic judge shirt, which is the black judge shirt, and then there are two special judge shirts. These are the only actual uniform differences. The two special judge shirts are the blue regional coordinator shirt that I have and the Grand Prix head judge burgundy shirt.
Which is super sharp looking. I really like that.
Yeah, it's a really, really great shirt. Yeah. I should probably apply to Head Judge Grand Prix at some point so that I can get one. But those are the only differentiations. Mm-hmm. Sometimes at Grand Prix, judges are given name tags by the Grand Prix tournament organizer. And because there's so many judges in the staff, oftentimes you don't know everybody. and there's oftentimes a lot of new judges on staff that don't know the level threes, and level threes are the
get
the
color coded to
and it's usually really really subtle. It's like the outline of the name badge is in a different color, or the name on the name badge is a different color, and that's just so that to help other judges find them. It's not to say this person's better than that person. It's just we want a way to for people that don't also identify us.
Yeah, I actually think the judge shirts are my least favorite part of the entire judge program. One is they fit women horribly. They fit those so bad. Even the women's version is like the most makes me look like a lump. Like it makes me look terrible. And two is that like they're black. It's like a black shirt with black pants, and like at a Grand Prix, even as a judge, it can be hard to find other judges because they're just in black. Like
yes,
which so is half the people at the GP. Like
I mean, like nobody ever has a problem finding me.
Well, yes.
But that's also because I'm a giant.
Yeah. Well, yeah, being tall helps. Helps a lot.
Thank you for answering this question seriously.
Well, there's the non-serious thing is, which I put command rank pips on my RC shirt.
And this was why I said, shut up, Rob, before you started talking.
I think I've worn a tie with my judge shirt.
Nice. I would actually be in favor of judges to Grand Prix being much more visible than black.
Hunter's orange.
Or even like the Star City blue is really nice.
I would honestly be fine with them switching the colors. All the floor judges get burgundy, all the head judges get black.
That would be great. Because the head judge is always usually in the same place anyways. Like they're easy to find.
Real question. Judges, if I cast Beacon of Destruction but forget to shuffle it in and my opponent notices it on his or her next main phase, what would be your ruling? Yes, Rob.
Shuffle it in.
I'm assuming competitive REL for
all this.
At FNM, you shuffle them in and you say, hey, don't forget this. You give a warning at competitive, and you give a failure to maintain for the non-Beacon player.
And this is generally true for anything that is in the wrong zone, just like Obsidat. Well, for the most part.
Generally.
So this is a question that I often think about. What's your best guess for how contraptions will work? Now, I've talked about this on the show, and it is the correct answer, but I'm interested to know your thoughts.
And it is the correct answer.
It is, according to me.
According to you. I hope that contraptions work like Munchkin cards work, where you basically just assemble giant things that... do crazy stuff out of components that otherwise do nothing.
Yeah,
they could also look like level cards. And it could be artifact contraption, and then it would be on the right side like a level card has. It has assembled once, assembled twice, or whatever.
Yep.
And so then when the contraption is assembled, it does something better.
Yeah, I think it's like I feel like it will look like festering, like the festering newt cycle with the
Ogre Witch festering newt and bubbling cauldron.
Yeah, just kind of assemble them all together.
Okay, Spooky Moon, a.k.a. Eldritch Moon, for those not in the know, what is causing the problem on Innistrad?
There are less hats than there were the last time we were there.
So the angels are, like, losing their minds.
They're punishing people for their lack of pious hats.
Yeah, hats. Perfect hats answer. Were the tribal theme in previous Innistrad, and now people have abandoned their hats, and they're being punished for their hubris.
I actually made a joke, because I like to do custom magic cards. I made a joke magic card called The Great Reveal. And it was like, two in a blue, and it says, an additional cost, sacrifice 5 clues. And it says, you may put an Eldrazi with converted mana cost 15 from your hand onto the battlefield.
Ta-da!
But nobody knows what it could be. I mean, it could really be anything. Any Eldrazi that costs 15.
Well, I'm actually fairly certain that there's going to be a double-faced... big furry monster card that's like the moon and a pile of cultists, and you transform them together.
That would be amazing.
Have you seen the might be Faker or might not be Endbringer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one that was printed across two cards.
Yeah, it's on the back of two cards. Some number of rare sheets have Smoldering Marsh and what's his name, the mythic Black Planeswalker from Omnixilus. And so it's got. They have normal fronts, and on their backs, it's an Endbringer that is an 8/8 that has an empty symbol space in the upper left for a double-faced card. And it's like, Endbringer isn't an 8/8, and it's also sideways and double-sized.
Could be.
Like
Big Furry Monster, basically.
Yeah.
A tournament legal Big Furry Monster.
A real
like,
big
that'd be amazing.
Monster. Yeah.
Yep. I will link you these at some point. All they're right. They are hilarious. I'm not convinced they're real, but I'm also not convinced they're not real. So
just got hunted by an elephant.
I think you got hooted at by an owl, but you know, opinions. Alright.
So can we be the Simic and compromise and say it's both an elephant and an
owl?
Oh
yeah, it can be an owl.
An elephant
sure.
owl?
An elephant owl.
So an owl the size of an elephant?
It's always like human first, right? And then is it alphabetical order and then class?
It depends on whether or not zombies on the card.
Hmm.
All
right. Oh, so it could be like a zombie, right? Because it could be a zombie owl elephant, or a zombie elephant owl, right?
But I think they have a question.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes, that's all good. When I cast a spell with madness, does it resolve before or after the discard effect takes place? For instance, hair of Falconwrath transforming. Hair of Falconwrath.
Hair?
Hair.
Hair of Falconwrath.
Fabulous hair.
Transforming.
She does have great hair, doesn't she? I feel like
push your thing.
Teapot.
I mean, like you're discarding, and the discard effect happens, and as you're doing that, you pay the madness effect happens.
Okay.
So you've already discarded the card when you play the card for its madness.
I think they're asking.
But what does the Heir of Falconwrath look like? Is it its front face or its back face?
It's front face because it is discard a card as a cost.
Okay.
So the answer is it depends. If the discard is part of the effect, then that thing is resolving. If the discard is part of the cost, then it's part of the cost of putting that on the stack, and the madness goes above it, and it resolves first.
Yeah, if it was worded like, discard a card, comma, transform this, colon, then it would be flipped.
But, I mean, like...
Transform as a cost?
Sure, I mean, why not?
That's exciting.
That could be cool.
Somebody get Mauro on the phone.
You can pay all sorts of costs that you shouldn't be able to pay. Yeah. You can pay by adding mana to your mana pool.
Yeah. Like,
so...
Another example would be like Jace Vryn's Prodigy is the opposite, right?
Right, exactly. It's part of the resolution of the ability.
Yeah.
All right. Sweet. We have one more from Twitter. How does Ever After affect color identity? Does a colorless card become monocolored and monocolored card become multicolored?
Ever After says return up to two creature cards. From target creature cards from your graveyard to the battlefield, each of those creatures is a black zombie in addition to its other colors and types. Put Ever After on the bottom of its owner's library.
Colorless and is not a color.
Yeah.
Brown is not a color, unfortunately.
Yep. So if you reanimate a colorless creature with this,
it's just black.
It's just black. But if you reanimate a green creature, it's now green and black.
Because it says in addition.
Yeah.
If it didn't say in addition, it would just make it black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look,
all right.
If it already had black and it's like double black, it's like.
Great.
So it's like so many skulls in there, like Grizzlebrand or Phyrexian Brother.
It just instantly turns into Grizzlebrand if you got enough black
symbols
on there.
On there.
Yeah, I like this plan.
Okay, what happens if I have dice representing -0/-1 counters and dice representing +1/+1 counters on my Wall of Roots, but both me and my opponent forget which die represents which? You get a firm slap is what happens.
Yeah,
yes,
I agree with the firm slap. Please pay more attention to which dice you're using.
This is specifically why they only print +1/+1 and -1/-1.
Yes.
Which is too bad, because like back in the day, there were all sorts of wacky counters, and it was
like
kind of fun.
Frankenstein's monster.
It was like
amazing.
Great.
No, we had to add a specific section to free and derived information for that stupid card. Like, Frankenstein's monster, you could put up Frankenstein's monster, put a d6 on it, and another d6 on 2 and 3. Put it forward and say, go. And your opponent goes, how big is it? And you go, guess. Now, you're obligated to tell them what kinds of counters are on things now.
Yeah.
As for the question, I would try to reconstruct as best as possible.
Like, yeah, I think usually you play through the game. It's kind of like the same thing when somebody has like two cards.
It becomes a lot easier if the creature has done something since it was played. Like,
Well, I would say, when did you play Wall of Roots? How many times have you activated Gavinny Township? Do you have other creatures with +1/+1 counters on them that were out at the same time as Wall of Roots?
Yep.
Okay, then those have to be +1/+1.
Yeah, context is huge for trying to reconstruct these game states. So.
Yeah. Because it's almost always Gavinny Township plus whatever.
And these are always the most complicated judge questions, too. Like,
yeah, these
are the ones where you step back from the table and you just, like, mull it over in your head.
Yeah, I'm actually doing a seminar at the Iowa conference on specifically sorting out things like this.
Yeah.
All
right, so if you exile a card with Pyxis of Pandemonium, then process it out of exile, and then activate Pyxis of Pandemonium's second ability, what happens?
I mean, Pyxis.
It's not in exile anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, so it doesn't see it. I have a question. Is when you process it out of exile, is it face up or face down?
Face up. Face up. Once it moves zones, it becomes a new object.
Okay.
Yep.
And note that it doesn't have any characteristics while it's face down, so many of the processors can't even touch it. Oblivion Sower, which only processes lands, can't touch the cards under Pyxis of Pandemonium.
Gotcha, because it doesn't know.
No. Correct.
Okay, how about this question to end? Flavor ruling, can a ceaseless hunger be satisfied by an infinite euro?
Ooh. How good is the euro?
Like, very good. Like, best in the Twin Cities.
I don't know, that's tough.
I have to hold something up here real quick.
Well, the question that I have is, for how long?
I mean, like, it's an infinite euro.
It's an infinite euro. Infinite euro.
So theoretically, the ceaseless hunger will never be satisfied, but it also will never run out of food to eat.
Right.
So you can keep it occupied, but I think the answer is it can't be satisfied by an infinite euro.
Yeah, it can just be distracted.
Okay.
It can be distracted for an infinite period of time as long as the euro continues to exist.
So this actually makes me think of the question that LSV asked Ben Stark that just, I could not stop laughing. So here it is for you too. So if you cast Pick the Brain, targeting your opponent, and they reveal Brain in the Jar, do you have to take the Brain in the Jar? I mean, are you obligated to take it?
I think so.
It does say Pick the Brain.
but
could you also just take any creature with a brain? Like, if it has a head?
Now, I mean, like, if we go with, like, the community cup style, like, rules where each person has a specific rule, like, I feel like under that type of scenario, you have to pick the brain in the jar unless there's a creature with, like, another creature with an exposed brain.
So
it has to be an exposed brain.
Well, yeah,
like, so, like, a contained brain would not count, then.
So, like,
if there's just a human on the card.
The star with, whenever you draw a card, each opponent loses a life.
That would be the Phyrexian something something.
No, it's not a Phyrexian anything. It's
Does the chat know?
What the card is?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're a little behind.
Yeah, it's all right. It's cool.
I'm
unlocking your phone and using search here.
While you guys are debating this, we have another good flavor one, which was, can
Lock
sleep paralysis affect a tireless tracker?
This is another one of those LSV questions. Really, you guys have to listen to this, the recording.
Psychosis crawler.
Flavor text, brain.
Oh, someone says
psychosis crawler. Yeah. So, like, psychosis crawler, if you...
Yeah, there we go.
But it's contained in a glass jar.
So
it's like
brain
in
a
jar.
Yeah, that's true.
But I'd say psychosis... Yeah, psychosis crawler you have to pick first because it says it's more brains.
That's fair.
Yeah,
all
specifically in flavor text. But otherwise, you have to pick brain in the jar. All
right, and can sleep paralysis affect a tireless tracker?
You can go to sleep when you're not tired.
Okay.
Like, a tireless tracker may still sleep.
Yeah.
They just don't.
Like, maybe they just had too much booze, or they took, like, an Ambien or something.
I mean,
if I
can be as wound up as I want, but if I get enough drinks in me, like, I'm out.
Even at, like, 8 in the morning?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, one more.
I refuse to admit whether or not that has happened before.
One more real question. We have Amelia attacks with a ball lightning. Neil blocks with Death's Shadow while at 8 life. What happens?
So it's a 5/5 right then?
So
this is a 13/13, right?
Yeah, so it's a...
Yep.
Yeah, so it's a 5/5 at that point.
Yes, and they're
ball
attacking with
a 6/1.
Ball lightning.
Ball lightning 6/1, trample.
Yeah, so, did Amelia elect to trample?
That's still up for grabs.
Because that's important.
Yeah.
That's the question.
Do you want to explain
Amelia
how
has
it,
a choice.
Explain to us how it works.
Amelia gets to choose whether or not she wants to trample over for 1, right? Because she's a 6 power being blocked by a 5/5. If she elects to trample over, she assigns 5 damage to the Death Shadow, 1 damage to the player. The damage happens. Death Shadow increases in size because it's a continuous effect.
Yep.
Immediately becomes a 6/6.
Yep, and then state-based actions are checked, and assuming that assuming nothing else is going on, it's a 6/6 with 5 damage marked on it and survives.
Yeah, this question is way more easily asked as, hey, I have a 2/3 Tarmogoyf and I cast Lightning Bolt and there's no instance in the graveyard. Does the Tarmogoyf die?
And it doesn't. And the answer is no. Yeah.
Yes.
So if she tramples over for one, the death shadow does not die.
Correct.
But if she assigns all 6 damage to the death shadow,
it does die.
It's real dead.
Yep.
Yes. That's
all right.
Super dead.
Yep.
Nice. Yep. Very cool. All right, Maria.
All right, how do you guys feel about this Judge Fest 2016, judges?
I think it's been fun. This has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, I want to say thank you to all our judges.
Wait, wasn't there one question you had in the car?
Oh, what was the question?
It was what is the most interesting judge call you've
had? Oh, yeah. So before we end, we're going to ask what was either the most interesting or perhaps most complex judge call you've ever had to deal with in your Magic careers.
So I have a really fun one that was just so weird. It was so weird. It was at a GP. It was a modern GP. And I get called over, and the opponent says, my opponent has checklist cards. And they're obviously Delver of Secrets, because it was like a blue-red aggro deck, so it was like Delver of Secrets and Young Pyroman. So it was obviously it was Young Pyroman, mm-hmm. or Delver of Secrets, but it wasn't marked on the card.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a blank checklist card. And it was just, just an English checklist card. It wasn't very valuable or anything like that. And so I say, we did the penalties and everything like that, and I ask the opponent, I'm like, I need you to mark on the checklist card that is a Delver of Secrets. And he was like, no, I refuse to do that. I refuse to deface a Magic card.
Whoa.
In this way.
But it's a checklist card?
It's a checklist card. It's specifically designed for being defaced.
Like the whole purpose of it is to be defaced.
Question, was this guy serious?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Assume goodwill and seriousness. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he appealed it to the head judge. And eventually I think he ended up marking the cards. He could have just marked on the sleeve or something like that. I mean,
as long as it's not a big
deal. Like a Sharpie or something like that.
If it was in a perfect fit, you can work on the perfect fit or something. But yeah, he was super, super upset about having to mark his checklist cards.
Were you like, I will go get you another one?
No, the correct response is, you may elect to do that. I will give you a game loss for every single game that you play.
Yeah.
I will follow you around and be like, well, that's
So that means I lose forever.
Yes.
Wow.
You don't get to play in this tournament anymore.
It's awkward because checklist cards aren't real cards until they're marked, basically.
Yeah.
Is the way the policy treats them.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was so weird. And it got appealed to the head judge. I had to bring the head judge over.
And the head judge was like,
You have to mark your card. Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah. You actually have to use this card the way it was intended to be used.
Okay, how about to Rob and Patrick? Favorite judge calls ever? Or most interesting?
I have a recent really weird and difficult one. So I was head judging the Legacy Open in Worcester, or was it New Jersey? Whichever it was. It was over Thanksgiving weekend this last year. And it's day two, so the players generally know what they're doing, which is only loosely.
Sure.
But
you said it was Legacy.
Yeah, it's Legacy. Yeah. It's Legacy day two, high table. We don't have a ton of judges because one of the judges off the event called in sick, so I'm taking calls on the floor as the head judge. And I get called over. And the... player A is playing Storm, mm-hmm. and... Or no, sorry. Player A is playing Elves. They went first. Player B is playing Storm. Player A, on their first turn, goes Forest, Green Sun Zenith for 0, fetch a Dried Arbor, shuffle my Green Sun Zenith in. So they pass the turn, and they have 2 lands on the battlefield and no cards in their graveyard. The Storm opponent untaps, plays an Underground, casts Brainstorm, goes into the tank for a little bit to figure out whether or not he can kill his opponent on turn 2, or even on this turn. I mean, the only reason to Brainstorm on turn 1 with Storm is to figure out if you can kill him on the spot.
Yep.
And he goes into the tank for a little bit, long enough where the Elves player gets a little bored, and he goes, okay, I'm going to put 2 cards back with Brainstorm. He sets his cards down, and he bumps one, and it falls half-cocked off the top of his library. And he goes back to his hand, and then he sees this, and he reaches over to fix it. And his Elf opponent, being really nice, goes, no, you didn't cast Ponder, you don't draw a card as the last part of the spell result. And the Storm player goes, oh, and the Elf player goes, oh wait, no, you cast it on my instep. Yeah, go ahead and draw your card for turn, just make sure to untap your land before you do in the future. And the Brainstorm player goes, okay, great, untaps his land, draws his card, taps his land, casts another Brainstorm, draws 2 cards, he goes into the tank for a little bit, and he's trying to figure out, and then he stops and he goes,
what?
it's not my turn again. Like, I thought it was my turn because you had two lands and nothing showing anywhere. Like, it made sense to me and it made sense to you, but it's not the case. And so they call a judge and they call me over and I sit down and I walk through the situation, get the whole situation. I go, you're in luck. I am the head judge and I may deviate from policy in significant and exceptional circumstances. And my options are leave this as it is or rewind using the drawing extra cards fix of letting your opponent choose cards out of your hand and shuffle them into your library. And if I leave it as it is, the Storm player gets a bonus turn and they win the game. If I let him get Thoughtseize twice, well, four times, because three Brainstorm cards plus card for turn from the Elves player, then the Elves player wins the games on the spot. And so I'm like, I would like to deviate in this circumstance. And then I looked at it, and I goes, I can deviate, but I don't know what to do. I was like, I genuinely have no idea how to fix this. I'm going to have to think about this for a minute. And the Storm player, who's way more experienced, goes, like, I explained the different options of them, and both of them hate everything.
Yeah.
They're just like, we want this to be a real game of Magic, but it really can't be at this point. And the Storm player goes, we can elect to draw this game, right?
Yes.
And I said, you may. And the Elves player goes, so does that mean that we're only going to play one more game? And I go, no. You play until somebody wins two games, because this is game one. This is midway into the round. The Elves player had won game one. And he's like, what happens if he wins the next game three? Do we draw the match? And I go, no. You play until somebody has two wins. I'll give you, like, 10 additional minutes, because of the time it took to figure this out. Play another game if you elect to draw. And the Elves player goes, oh, so this game just doesn't matter. Doesn't count. I go, yes.
Does
great. I like every option is terrible. And, like,
this
still,
is the least terrible option.
Yeah, I still really don't have a good idea. Like,
yeah, I have no idea how you fix
the,
that.
So the policy fix says do some rewinding. It's miserable. There's a lot of different partial fixes that have been suggested to me, and I don't like any of them. This is just literally like somebody took an extra turn and then caught it well past the point of no return. Play on from there is what policy probably have me do, because it's a rewind involving random elements. I don't especially like that.
Yeah.
Like, it just kills the Elves player who has managed to cast one spell.
All right.
So, possibly I don't know whether I could call it the most complicated judge call I've had, but it was certainly the one that made me feel the cruddiest about having taken it. Or having to rule on it. So, Gen Con last year, I was head judge for Modern Champs. One of my floor judges takes a call. A player playing Lightning Storm.
Mm-hmm.
You may remember this. Player playing Lightning Storm. So, if for people who don't know what Lightning Storm
is...
This is the Ad Nauseam Storm, Lightning Storm deck. Where you play Lightning Storm and then you discard... Well done, Rob.
Yeah.
You play Lightning Storm, and then you discard lands to make Lightning Storm bigger to kill your opponent all in one go. So, player had, you know, ad nauseamed, played Lightning Storm, and then kind of just sat there and was dirtling, didn't say anything, didn't do anything. And his opponent goes, judge. And I'm like... my floor judge comes over and takes the call, and he's like, at this point, my opponent has not explicitly retained priority. I'd like to do something with Lightning Storm on the stack. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I should have priority to do something, right? And my floor judge ruled no. And so the player appeals immediately to me. And I come over, and I spend about 5 to 6 minutes talking with these guys. One of the players is actively conversing with me and talking, and the player who's playing Lightning Storm has said about 5 words, answered my questions, but kind of refuses to give me more information about what has happened. And I go, I've got a lot of information about what's happened from this guy. That's the person I'm most sure about what's happened here. Like, so I ruled in favor of the opponent. He had the priority, and the guy who played Lightning Storm just lost on the spot.
Yep.
And those are really frustrating, because you go, I made a call that was entirely within policy.
Yeah.
And it sucks to have to make that call.
Yep.
But it's also one of those things where people who play decks like that have to know exactly what they're doing. Well, and Lightning Storm in particular is just infuriating for people to have to judge with people who aren't familiar with the card and how it works.
You just have to play the deck on Moto once, and you will instantly know how the card works.
Yeah, and you're like, oh.
You hold control, and you keep priority, and then you win.
Or you cast it, and you didn't know that you had to do that, and your opponent
passes
it.
And you just die.
And you just die. Yeah.
And you're like,
oh, so
why
that's
doesn't my
what
spell
I...
work? And then you go Google it, and then you're angry because you just threw away.
Well, yes.
Your ticks in your
no, I
like
you.
But you weren't on Moto.
Right.
But yeah, like so, I absolutely hated having to deliver that ruling, but it was the perfect example of players giving me information that I needed to reconstruct what had happened, or refusing to give me information and me having to go with the partial story that the opponent was able to give me articulately.
It's kind of a judgment, and
it becomes a judgment call where I go, I have information that makes me want to believe this wholeheartedly.
I actually really have a hard time with those judge calls where, like, you get called to the table and both players are equally right. Like, they both make cases that could be equally plausible.
And you must make
and you
decision.
Have to make a decision. Yep. And often you're right. It just comes down to, like, who explained the case more eloquently. Like, I mean, that's tough. I mean, like, if they can explain it clear and they have a better idea of the board state and what's going on, like...
As much as possible, I try to dig for facts. I had a situation where I got it appealed up to me. Player A missed his second land drop on the draw and went to he goes, I would like to discard. His opponent had two mana untapped and wanted to cast thing. He goes, I would like to go to discard. He says to his opponent, can I go to discard? He goes, yeah. He discards a card, and his opponent then wants to cast a spell, some kind of draw and discard kind of effect. And he's like, no, you don't get the ability to cast that because you...
It's in my cleanup.
Discard happens
after my cleanup. And he's like, you don't get the ability to see this. The judge ruled that the opponent could play a spell. He appealed it. He starts going into this long, like, you know, I told him that he couldn't do this the last time that he tried to do it in my previous turn. And, you know, I gave it to him once and he's not allowed to do it. And I'm like, is this card in your graveyard the card you're trying to discard this turn? He goes, yeah. I go, it's the only card in your graveyard. Why did you... What previous turn? And he goes from angry to stupefied, like, oh, I've been being a jerk this whole time. I'm like, I agree with you. Your opponent doesn't get to cast the spell. But don't try to make stuff up. Like,
I mean, but I've definitely had calls. It doesn't happen very often where, like, they disagree on the facts. Like,
yeah.
There are two players who have completely different understandings of the facts of the spell.
Right. But trying to... my point is that trying to... you ask them questions that can be proved or disproved, like, where did that card come from? Oh, well, that gives me context to the whole rest of your story.
Yeah.
And that's... Sometimes you can't. Like, sometimes you're just stuck.
That's what being a judge means.
Yeah.
In the end,
so,
you
sometimes
are
being
made
a judge
to
means,
judge.
Actual judging.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's a reason that we make judgment calls all the time. Like,
that's why we're not called referees. I mean,
it's also why you should be wearing long black robes like the Supreme Court, my humble opinion.
Yeah. Agree.
If we could wear the big white powdered wigs,
let's be clear. If I had a big black robe and a wig, I would have showed up to this and that.
Okay.
100%.
Right. Yeah,
we'll take that. 2017, you guys have to
supply robes and wigs.
We will.
Yeah, pitch
and like squeaky hammer gavels, like.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to bang on this really nice table.
That's what we'll have for 2017, is squeaky hammer gavels, robes, and wigs. Thank you all so much for participating
in
Judge Fest
2016.
Absolutely, thank you very much.
That was super fun.
Awesome.
We decided to hold this event, of course, to thank the judges in our community because judges are great, and we wanted to give them some more recognition and have some good, fun, old-fashioned times with them answering some silly questions that we have. And thank you to April for Magic the Jeopardy, which was incredible.
That was fantastic.
So just fantastic. Thank you all for your service to this magic country.
Yes. And if you are listening to the audio version of this, we highly recommend, especially for this episode, that you check out the video, which is on the Tolarian Community College YouTube channel, and will be up later this week as well. So you can see all those awesome Jeopardy questions and our wonderful guests.
So until Judge Fest 2017, this is Megan Maria signing off. See you on the internets, kids.
Oh, oh.